Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain!
Not here.
Captain!
Aboard.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to the Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. We're the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. It'd be weird if we weren't.
Yeah, like, we're off mic just listening to two fucking assholes do our show for us in the off season. That's what we should be doing. It's interns time, right?
Yeah.
Summer internship at Greatest Discovery. That'd be awesome.
I bet Rob would do a real nice job if we just gave him the reins.
Rob's a total professional. What makes me feel bad about even putting this out into the ether is that, like, a fair number of our viewers would probably prefer that.
Oh, yes, please. Hosts with talent and interesting things to say.
You mean you have a professional producing your show and not on mic? What a terrible way to deploy your resources.
We read a comic book for today, Adam.
Yeah, we sure did, because when we read the first two issues of Star Trek Discovery Succession, they had been out for a while, and then we had to kind of wait for the third issue to come out, and that issue came out just last month.
I was reading a little interview with Mike Johnson and Christian Beyer?
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote these, and I didn't realize that Kristen Beyer was in the writer's room on Disco.
Yeah.
I can't believe, maybe I did know that and I forgot it, but I was reading this this interview, and, like, because they did the, they did an earlier comic series, which maybe should have been the one we started with, called The Light of Kalis, that's all about T'Kuvma, and... like this interview that I read on Den of Geek, she's talking about, like, yeah, like there was crosstalk in both directions on this Light of Kalis story, where backstory that they came up with for T'Kuvma for purposes of comic book wound up in the show.
What?
Yeah, and it's very unusual that that would ever happen, because usually these ancillary media properties are just, you know, they're just like fringe cash to, you know, for the media companies to profit off of their IP, you know. They don't think of it as like where the creative is happening.
With a creative job like this, often you are made to sign a contract that any ideas that happen in the room belong to the room and the project. So it's like the joke that I was going to make is like, Kristen Beyer's in the writer's room, like, shooting down other people's ideas so that she could take them to the comic. Like, no, that'd never work on an episode. It's too expensive.
Yeah. She wrote the episode Si Vis Pacem Parabellum, which I think is the one where they're running around in the forest and... Saru gets...
That's Horsey Saru.
Yeah, he does a couple of lines of blue powder. Gets real fucked up.
Yeah, he's jacked up on that horsey sauce.
And then there's this other new one that just came out that's more graphic novel-y in length. It's all about Stamets and how he discovered the mycelial network and how he met Hugh Culber and stuff. Like, it's a big Stamets backstory.
Oh, we should do that one too, but that one's like 50 pages, right?
It's a big long one, yeah.
I think we could take that down in an episode.
Yeah.
Speaking of being jacked up, Ben, did I tell you that when I was at Roderick's place, I had instant coffee for the first time, I think, ever?
Whoa.
he's struggling in a way that is like ripe for comedy, because he has three different broken coffee makers on his kitchen counter.
He's becoming so self-parodic.
Yeah. Like, nothing surprises me anymore when I'm over there. And he's like, hey, can I get you some coffee? I'm like, sure. And then he busts out the like glass jar of instant coffee. And I'm like, what the hell is that, man?
Like Folgers crystals style?
It was not a brand that I recognized.
Wow.
And he was like, yeah, I took this out of my bunker stash. Like the stash of food that I keep in case the world goes to hell. You just, of course it is.
Uh-huh.
So we have this bunker coffee, and he's like, hey, man, watch out for this stuff. It's really strong. And I'm not believing this for a second, because how strong can instant coffee be?
Yeah.
The answer, Ben, is stronger than any nitro cold brew I've ever had.
Whoa.
It
Did you propel yourself home on ass juice?
My hands didn't stop shaking until like 5 or 6 in the evening. And I had maybe 3/4 of a cup. What I'm trying to say is, like, maybe we should start rethinking instant coffee. Like, there should be instant coffee bars around.
Jeez,
if what you need is the juice,
yeah,
like the energy, I think instant coffee might be where it's at, and it's not $5 a cup like I've been getting it.
Yeah, I guess so what you're saying is all the like fancy, hipstery, super freshly roasted coffee that I've been consuming might have been stepped on with baby laxative to mitigate its effects somewhat.
That's
and
what I'm saying.
And this is the pure uncut shit.
Yeah, what you want is crystals, Ben. What you want is crystals and a stay fresh like foil liner to open. That's how you know it's the good stuff.
So we're up earlier than normal. We typically don't go for recording time before 10 a.m., but because you've got a lot of travel coming up, we've got a lot of runway that we need to build in order to cover that, and we're squeezing this one in at a 9 a.m. record.
Yeah.
And like, my body is so out of whack that like this coffee talk is really confusing me. it sounds great, but also I had my coffee earlier than I normally do because I got up earlier than I normally do to get ready for this.
Uh-huh.
And I also had my big anniversary dinner last night. And
congratulations.
And like, I didn't really like hit the bottle that hard. I didn't drink that many drinks. I think I had 3 alcohol beverages over the course of the evening.
That's totally reasonable on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, but I woke up and I'm like not totally positive that I'm not sick or something, you know?
Oh.
I'm in that liminal state.
You doing the show over a bucket?
Yeah. I cut a hole in my office chair just in case.
God, Ben, I fear the bucket show that I know is coming for me down the road.
Just at some point in the future, it's inevitable.
Like, I'm glad that we get a modesty tablecloth at every live show, because eventually you're really going to need that.
Oh, man. We had a... So we went out to this restaurant and had a nice dinner, and then decided to go to a nearby rooftop bar to enjoy a little al fresco cocktail. And it was not terribly crowded, but crowded enough that we had to like go sit at some seats that were like pretty close to some other people. And
oh, you hate that, don't you?
I was having like a pretty like heartfelt conversation with my wife of 3 years, and this girl next to us, has apparently been just overhearing our entire conversation and leans over to us and says, "Dude, you are totally blowing it. She's not into you."
What the fuck?
I was like, we're on our third anniversary date. I don't think you know what you're overhearing. And my wife jumped in and defended my honor a little bit. I was about to go fairly nuclear on this lady.
Oh, and you would have had every right to. Oh my God.
Yeah, and I think she was like really embarrassed, but like that's our new code for we're feeling close and romantic with each other is, dude, you are totally blowing it right now. I was like, that lady was a real dope, but she gave us a beautiful gift.
Wow. What did she, like, what was her reaction to being wrong?
She shut up, and then, like, I realized, like, the gentleman that she was with had, like, gone away and had been gone for, like, 20 minutes at the point where she leaned over. So then, like, my conversation with my wife continued, and she got on the phone to go, like, where are you? Like, where did you go? Because it was like a fairly large establishment, and I guess he'd just disappeared off to some other part of it. So she was probably
ran away from someone who would do that. Jeez.
Yeah, I think she had a pretty honest misunderstanding. But misunderstand all you want, don't lean into somebody's conversation. Like, what is the upside? Like, even if we were on a Tinder date or whatever, what's the upside of that?
Did she think that she was, like, being a hero and, like, saving your wife?
Yeah,
from...
like, don't worry, lady. I'll cockblock this guy for you.
Jeez. I can't. Wow. Great restraint by you, because in that position, I honestly don't know how bad it could have gotten, but I imagine it could have gotten extremely bad.
I was partly constrained by not wanting to ruin the moment and partly constrained by, like, the crippling amounts of anxiety I feel in situations like that to shut down and withdraw into myself.
And I never want to make a scene. Like, yeah. If I have made a scene, it means I am out of control.
Right.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, pretty wild little little evening there. And we'll see if my belly survives it today.
Wow. Well, we'll see if anyone survives the third issue of the Star Trek Discovery Succession series as we turn the page of our show to Star Trek Discovery Succession, issue 3.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Those are Klingons?
What the hell is going on in this ship?
I have no idea.
What is this?
How much backstory did you have to, like, go through to remind yourself? Because I felt like I didn't remember the story up till now as well as I would have if I'd watched this on television.
I think one of the things that this comic book series does pretty well is not, like, it does not beg you to go back and reread. It doesn't do a last time on Star Trek Discovery recap,
right?
But the initial scenes of the comic bring you back up to speed and remind you via breadcrumbs. Where we last left the series, Arium had taken command of the Shenzhou by gassing the bridge crew.
Yeah, her face turned into a gas mask.
Yeah. Michael Burnham was thought to be dead, but instead is very much alive and is on Kronos working with Laurel and the Resistance. And Alexander has ascended to the throne and is now the ruler of the Terran Empire. He's the fuckboy.
Fuckboy emperor.
Yeah.
He's like the actual, like the genetic descendant of Georgiou, but was not first in line, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
he's like the Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Francis Buxton.
Yeah. Did they
believe me, don't you, Emperor Georgiou?
I did like the scene in issue 2 where he was in his giant bathtub with all his really fancy bathtub toys. And Michael Burnham burst in through the door and jumped through the air and tackled.
What a great set piece that was.
God, there's so many amazing ideas in that movie. Like, every idea is so top-notch.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of swimming pool as bathtub really appealed to me at that age.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So decadent. Do you have to drain that thing after you bathe?
God. Ugh. I mean, you must. I mean, that would be gross.
Yeah. But this is Southern California. You can't just dump that much water.
Maybe it's a saltwater bathtub, and it's got, like, top-notch filtration.
Or maybe Francis and his family are, like, really groovy and reusey, and they have a gray water system, and they use that to, like, water their plants or something.
That's one thing I assumed about the Buxtons, was how groovy and earth-friendly they were.
They gave up plastic drinking straws way before the rest of us.
Yeah.
My father says everything's negotiable.
So this first scene is kind of a flashback, and it is Emperor Giorgio receiving word that Michael Burnham has perished. She's like, she's standing around with all her metal breastplate buddies, telling them like she wants to hunt and kill Lorca, and she basically wants him brought before her alive so that she can get the satisfaction of doing the deed. And to the extent that like she'll be murderously pissed at somebody who kills him in attempting to apprehend him.
And Mirror Bob is trying to make herself into a good soldier. She's like, "Oh yeah, absolutely, Emperor. I'll get the man and bring him to you." And this is not something that Giorgio is willing to believe wholeheartedly, because even in the Mirror Universe, Bob and Lorca were pretty close.
Yeah, they are interrupted by a bald man bearing bad news who tells his liege, Emperor Giorgio, that Michael Burnham perished in attempting to apprehend Lorca.
This is a really nice sequence in the comic. Like, they do a three-panel triptych of, like, close-up on Giorgio telling everyone to leave, and then everyone leaves, and then she just kind of crumbles to the ground in grief.
Yeah.
I like it when comics do that, the passage of time like that.
Yeah, and this is a character whose emotional inner life we don't get much of, and...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and this is a character that we meet in the television show, so we know what she's about, and to see a moment of extreme vulnerability like this is pretty interesting and I think really nicely drawn.
Doesn't seem like she'd be capable of this as the version of her that we get on the show, you know?
Like, she's always with other people, though, you know? Like, this is a private moment, and I mean,
yeah.
I don't think we got any of those in the television series.
Not a lot of privacy on Disco.
No. So, do we know... the thing I couldn't remember is, do we know... Have we ever met Mirror Universe Michael Burnham, or do we know, like, what made them think she died?
I don't know if that's totally clear to us at this point.
Okay. That's reassuring, because that was kind of my memory of it, but I feel like there's a small chance that there's some information that I'm forgetting that would make this clearer.
Especially because that situation is used so much as cover,
right,
for these activities.
The death of Lorca and the death of Burnham both have like major impact in both the television series and the comics, so...
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get tweets if we're wrong with that.
So we flash forward to the present, and Emperor Fuckboy is pissed because he's having a FaceTime with the governor of Kronos, and he's pissed because the governor left the planet after seeing Michael Burnham without killing her.
Yeah, I like this this communication technology is a new, different thing from what they show in the show.
Yeah.
You know, in the show, everybody's like a hologram that's able to walk around the room and like sit on a couch that's really there.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably they're in some kind of holographic space that provides analogous furniture to the room that they're beaming into.
I love that that modern furniture store that you just created. Analogous furniture.
Yeah.
Super uncomfortable, but God, really, really makes a room look bigger.
Mm, the elegant lines, and it's very form over function. That's the problem. But this,
fuck you, Eames.
but this is the Charles and also Ray. this communication technology is, there's kind of like a pedestal with the governor of Kronos, kind of, he is a hologram man, but it's only his upper half and he kind of just fades into the pedestal.
There's a vibe to that that I can really get with, like, what that's very subtle, right?
Yeah.
In Prime Universe, there's freedom to move around. During a FaceTime, in Mirror Universe, you are confined, as you were confined in many other circumstances.
Yeah, I like it. The reason Fuckboy Emperor is pissed is that the governor had an opportunity to kill Michael Burnham and left. And the governor's like, well, dude, like, they're about to drop the genetic death bomb on Kronos. And I really wanted to get out of there just in case it's not as finely tuned to Klingon DNA as all that. And
sounds reasonable.
But he's like, well, I'll go back and kill her right now. And and Emperor Fuckboy is like, no, don't bother. Like, at this point, she's going to be pretty easy to find. So,
yeah, the picture he paints verbally is super fucked up. He's like, yeah, so she'll be the only survivor on a planet full of dead Klingons. Shouldn't be an issue for the sensors to pick her up.
Yeah. Plenty to eat, though. So he tells the captain of the ship that the governor beamed onto, hey, toss this guy in the agonizer booth and we'll catch up later, all right?
Yeah, that is so much more forceful than just like slamming down the phone receiver to hang up on someone.
Yeah, I like the like getting pulled back out of the like hologram camera angle.
That's a good look.
What does that look like? I wish they'd like given us one more panel to show him like disappearing, you know, just to see what that would look like.
Yeah, I dig that move. It's like being pulled out of the confinement of the FaceTime.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
What? What's happening?
What?
What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
Down on Kronos, Michael Burnham and Laurel and the gang are finding the notes about what's about to happen in the governor's computer system, and she's like, yeah, this is not going to be pretty. Like, y'all are about to die. I guess that Andorian guy wouldn't die, right?
Yeah, the Andorian would get to split the food with Michael Burnham if they stayed. And I guess also Amanda Grayson. Like, they'd be eating great.
All you can eat, gah.
It'd be like a real last man on earth situation down there.
Yeah.
They're just driving around all the government cars and eating all their great food off of their fine china.
Yeah, good times. And she's like, you know, she's saying, we got to go. We got to get the fuck out of here. And I think this is like Laurel kind of losing her faith in Michael Burnham, because their agreement is to like, Michael Burnham has to help kill the governor and then Laurel will help kill the emperor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they missed their opportunity to kill the governor. So I guess Laurel is like, hey, you know, I know you're talking about how everybody of my species is about to be wiped out, but what I'm really concerned with is that our contract is void.
This makes for some great tension, too, when two ostensible enemies need to team up to survive. Like, there's all sorts of great stuff that can happen.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Mayquis storyline that we just were covering on Greatest Generation, where Commander Sisko and Gul Dukat kind of temporarily find their goals in alignment and have to go motor around the galaxy together, pursuing a common cause.
It's road trip time.
Yeah. They want the same thing for very different reasons.
In orbit, we're in the Constellation Bridge, where they're just about to release the gene weapon on Kronos. But, like, right as the F part of fire is being said...
Did you notice that this is Captain Decker?
I did.
Isn't that fun?
He's one of the most decorated captains in Starfleet, according to Star Trek Discovery. He's on the list.
He's on the, yeah, he's on the big four that the computer tosses on screen.
Right? Yeah, he's on the Mount Star Trek more of captains.
Mount Trek more.
Yeah, that's a better way to say it.
Yeah, the Constellation is in the midst of the Xeno sighting the Klingons when they get lit up by the Shenzo.
Like, what if the Borg ship had done this to the Enterprise D right as Riker was about to fire? Like, they rack into Riker's face. He's just about to say the word, and then they just cut to the exterior.
somebody cut that together. There's enough footage out there that you could make that. That happen.
Yeah, there's cause and effect footage of the D being destroyed in a number of ways.
Yeah, so go ahead and avail yourself of it. I want to see that clip. They're pretty surprised, but less so when Arium pops up on the screen and she kind of villain monologues at them a bit.
She villain monologues, but also like goes big in the view screen too, which I really like.
Yeah,
her face fills it.
Yeah, which is something that they did a lot early on in TNG. Like, there's that great the first time they meet the Ferengi and the guy's like just against a white background and his face is like almost entirely filling the view screen, but you don't see it that often, so it's fun to, like, that's I think one of the fun parts about this comic is that they get to do some compositions that are impossible in television.
In the same way that styles change over the years, so too, like, the vanity of aliens has changed. if you have lots of loaf and some big ears or something, maybe you don't want to be that close to the FaceTime camera.
You don't want to reveal how latexy you are.
But it's a real bad guy look to fill the frame.
Yeah.
Classic move.
Yeah, it's a an obey giant kind of move. So Arium has her peeps beam the gene weapon off of the ISS Constellation, and then they target their nacelles and surprise attack complete. RSVP Captain Willard Deckard.
Is the Constellation totally destroyed if the nacelles are blown off? I'm ready to believe that.
I think the implication is that the Constellation, she dead.
Yeah, I think that has to be it. I mean, we've seen proof on a bunch of Star Trek series that once those nacelles are fucked with, they're very sensitive, Ben. I don't know if you know this. If you just roll a nacelle in your fingers, like, I think you can tell a lot of things about it. One of which is how sensitive they are.
Yeah. You don't want to take a boot to the nacelle. That'll ruin your day.
And this this Constellation is taking heavy fire straight to the nacelles. So
yeah.
I think I'm ready to believe you now that RSVP, ISS Constellation.
Yeah, although, you know, in this series, if you don't see somebody actually physically dead, you can never really trust that they're dead. So maybe Deckard will come back.
Yeah. On Kronos, the gang is retreating. This is sort of like, this is happening concurrently. It's Michael Burnham, Laurel, Amanda Grayson, and Cole. And Cole's the guy at the TSA checkpoint that had a weapon in his bag, and it does not go well at security.
Yeah.
Because he starts taking swings at Michael Burnham.
Yeah, they're like, sir, would you like to drink that here? And instead, he throws it at Michael Burnham. he means to kill her for pretty, like, reasonable Klingon motivations. And Laurel is like, knock it off, idiot. We're working together right now.
The breastplate does not appear to be axe-proof.
No. Well, she is wearing that breastplate, isn't she?
The breastplate and turtleneck combo, yeah.
It also, like, this was, like, one thing where I kept going back and forth from one page to the next, because it, like, it hits her kind of on the shoulder, it looks like, but then she's pulling it out of, like, her chest.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was a little bit of a throwing knife continuity issue there.
Yeah. There's a really nice comic book sound effect here for this moment. I love comic book sound effects. You get a nice shuck.
Yeah. And then when she pulls it out, slugh. Slugh. This injury does not appear to affect her once she gets beamed up to the ship. Like, she is... It is not a bad knife through the chest wound, apparently.
No. No, it's not. Cole is like a poor marksman. Cole keeps missing the target.
So we get Cole Laurel, Amanda Grayson, and Michael Burnham beamed up onto the ISS Shenzhou, where Arium and two fuckboy guards meet them. And Cole takes everything at face value because he's not privy to all of this shit. But it's kind of explained to him, like, this is all part of the plan. And Arium and Laurel had previously known each other, so they've been like conspiring together. And Arium at some point gets called human. She does not take kindly to that.
No, that's a slur to her.
Yeah. So Cole is like, well, if you guys are all working together, who are these fuckboys and why do they have weapons drawn on us? And Arium is like, oh, I can explain that.
Yeah, by murdering them.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, phaser set to gore. And also, it's like a double beam phaser, too.
Yeah, I like that part.
She has that, like, squirt gun that squirts out the sides and as well as the front.
That was such a shitty squirt gun, though.
Yeah.
Like, on the rack, it looks like it's going to be the best thing. It's really going to level the squirt gun playing field.
Yeah. You need to really be surrounded for that to hit anyone. And at that point, it's like you're getting soaked.
Yeah, and how often can you remember being surrounded by people with water guns? Like, it feels like a very, like, skirmishy, one-on-one guerrilla warfare situation.
Right. Like, the use case is that, like, you would maybe, like, be, like, you know, it's like a doors and corners thing where you're going to go around a corner and somebody's going to not think that you're onto them, but then you... But you can't aim those sideways-facing ones.
No. You can't. You're better off just throwing a balloon around a corner.
Yeah, that's what you got to clear the room with some explosives.
Ben, I was at a little kid's birthday party over the weekend.
Oh, Adam, I thought that the court told you not to do that.
This was a kid that I knew, the son of some good friends of ours.
Uh-huh.
He was turning 4. And we were having it in this park, and like part of the idea was like water balloon fight.
Yeah,
we brought a big like laundry basket full of pre-filled water balloons.
Oh, that's nice.
And the parents were like, "Wear clothes you don't mind getting wet. Bring some towels. Like expect to get it's sort of like the Disneyland warning. Like
you might get
prepared. Yeah, you might get wet.
You will get wet. You might get soaked.
Right." So I'm like rubbing my hands together like, oh, I haven't been in a water fight in forever. And this sounds like one I can win because it's a bunch of 4-year-olds. So we get there.
Coming up next, an old man taking a bath.
Right. So they have produced the water balloons. They are set down on the ground. The kids start going for the balloons. And the most surprising thing happened, Ben. They threw them at the ground.
What?
They picked up balloons and threw them at the ground to make them explode because that was like, that was the impressive part. No one threw a balloon at anyone else.
What?
And we were like encouraging it. Like, no, that's not a water balloon fight. You gotta throw that balloon at your buddy.
It wasn't a success unless somebody ends the night crying.
Yeah, and so instead it was like seeing how far they could throw the balloon, like grenades, and then like watching them explode when they hit the ground. It was just, it was awful. It was the saddest scene.
Is that a 4-year-old thing, or is that a kids these days thing?
There was a mixed amount of ages. All these kids were great. I don't want to make it seem like it's a kids these days kind of story that I'm telling, but I expected people to get soaked with water balloons, and that was not what these kids were interested in doing. Weird, right?
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I was very close to starting shit myself, though, Ben. Like,
I think what I would want to do would be to kind of play the instigator, like throw water balloons that like kids don't see them coming and don't know who's doing it.
Right. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I'm saying. But I didn't have the guts.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
like,
nothing worse than getting scolded by a parent for like Lennying the game.
Especially because my wife and I don't have kids and we're at this party. Like, yeah. There are a lot of kids and a lot of parents and very few childless friends at this thing. Like, you don't want to be the childless friend instigating the tears of a water balloon fight. You leave that to an actual parent.
My people were biologically determined for one purpose alone, to sense the coming of death.
What?
To sense the coming of death.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
This doesn't make any sense.
I sense it coming.
Any sense. Sounds like nonsense to me.
On the Shenzo, this gang that seems to be forming has kind of a hang, and Arium explains that this thing that the Emperor is pursuing is happening on all of these planets in the known galaxy, and Doria is next, and like, I think it's Cole, right, that is like, what the fuck is, like, like, the economic case for this is insane. Like, the Empire is only rich because it has slave labor on all these planets. Like, why would you take out all your slaves? And
Cole's utility in this story is important because he's asking all the questions we'd be asking.
Right. Cole is us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Michael Burnham is like, yeah, he's just a total ethnic cleanser, and that's the only logic he's pursuing. It doesn't make sense. It's like, no racism actually makes sense if you interrogate it long enough.
Right.
So yeah, we see the Emperor like in a kind of post-coital situation, finding out that they still haven't heard anything from the Constellation about how dead all the Klingons are. He's very, very angry about that.
There's no way neither of those girls came, right? He doesn't seem like a very giving lover.
One of them is lying face down and has kind of like a dubstep haircut.
Yeah, is that Detmer?
I wasn't positive that was even a girl. Like, oh yeah, it could be Detmer.
I thought it was Detmer.
I liked the idea that maybe he's not, you know, maybe he has like a more varietal sexual interest, but maybe that's just Detmer.
I like the idea that he's just like a whale, like it's about quantity. Like, give me a pile. Just, hey, Calvis, send a mixed pile to my bed.
a frito misto, as the Italians would call it. But the Shenzo shows up not at Andoria or at Gamaris 5, but at Earth. And Arium kind of talks her way past the harbor master. She's like, yeah, we had some damage to our long-range communications, and we need to get fixed up before we go take out all the Gamaris 5ians. We're gonna park it. And this gang of five beam down to Earth and are greeted by Mirror Universe Bob, who is apparently also in on the dastardly plan.
What do you think the hangar tea room is like in the Mirror Universe?
Oh yeah, like San Francisco's greatest and perhaps oldest dim sum restaurant.
I bet their dumplings suck.
Yeah, I bet that steamed pork bao is no good.
God, what a tragic place Mirror Universe San Francisco is.
Yeah, fascist San Francisco, which is like, you know, more and more the case every day. Every time I go to San Francisco, I'm more and more convinced that we're living in the Mirror Universe. But
oh no, the tenderloin is like the nicest part of San Francisco in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little of there's no there. It's not the city that I grew up near.
There's no barrel drinks at Mirror Universe Smuggler's Cove.
Oh, what a shame.
Right?
The Mirror Universe Soup and Kuchen has terrible spetzel and no boot beer. This is Adam and I doing bits at each other about restaurants that we have gone to together. What a great comedic vein to exploit.
Terrible Spetzel was the name of my high school band.
Well, anyway, so the pretty obviously bad plan of, okay, we're gonna like Han and Chewie you and take you before the Emperor as prisoners, and then all the guards in there are loyal to me, Mirror Universe Bob. So, like, it's like the Walter Sobchak plan of I'm gonna grab the Emperor and beat him to death. Like,
it's a real shit plan.
It is not a Swiss fucking watch. And they
this
go
is
in
a Timex.
Yeah, they go in there, and Grayson, the two Klingons, and Michael Burnham are, you know, kicked to their knees in front of Emperor Fuckboy, and he's delighted. He's in a much better mood than he was in earlier. Michael Burnham spits in his face, and he's about to execute his evil plan. He kills Amanda Grayson, right?
I love that the order of operations here is like Mirror Universe Bob allows Amanda Grayson to be killed before like the plan goes in motion.
Right.
That is super rugged.
It's fucked up. Like, I don't really know what the story utility of having her taken out is. Like,
it makes me think there's some antipathy between Bob and Amanda Grayson.
Yeah, she's like hoping that it plays like that. Like, I don't know who he's going to draw a knife on first, but yeah, I mean, it seems like he's just going to knife them all, right? Like,
right.
That's kind of where he's going. And he's like deciding who next to kill. Bob gives the word. I guess Laurel like headbutts him, and Bob gives the word, and he's like, ha, 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 ha. "That's not going to happen. These guys are actually, in fact, loyal to me, not you."
Kind of makes Captain Arium's decision to just kill as many people on her ship as possible smart.
Yeah, like those two guards. I guess she's listening to everybody. She has a total like panopticon level of surveillance on the Shenzo.
Yeah, she's got that thing that we saw on that one Mirror Universe episode of TOS, right? What was that thing called? The Tantalus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess she kind of does have the Tantalus.
Yeah.
But it doesn't kill. There's not a kill switch on. She just has total surveillance coverage.
Right.
And she is the last person we see in this issue. Like, we cut to Orbit, and she's messing around on her laptop with some DNA sequences. And it becomes clear that her plan is to xenocide not Kronos, but Earth.
Yeah. She's got a real axe to grind with these humans. She fucking hates them.
I suppose it's possible that she has it, like, you can tune this thing to kill any species, right? So it could be that mm-hmm. she's tuned it to kill somebody not humans. Like, are there enough Vulcans that launching this on Earth would be like a thing or something like that?
We just recently watched the movie Downfall for our other hit show, Friendly Fire.
Yeah.
And Captain Arium's decision to retune the genetic weapon towards human, if this is what she's doing, makes me wonder if a possible consequence to this is that they somehow get Emperor Fuckboy, they attune the weapon to humans, and he doesn't die because it turns out he is of impure racial makeup.
Shit.
Like, I wonder if that, I wonder if the hypocrisy of racial purity will be will be on display here. W/R/T, Emperor Fuckboy.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that this xenocide everyone on Earth plan happens, because we're also like, we've watched our first Mirror Universe DS9 episode already, mm-hmm. and the backstory is not everybody on Earth got killed at some point.
Yeah, that would be a pretty significant retcon.
The Empire is still a thing when Kirk and Spock meet the Mirror Universe, so
right,
and that hasn't it's even closer to this timeline. So,
right,
I don't know. Hey, yeah. Speaking of Kirk and Spock, I wanted to see if maybe for next episode of Greatest Discovery, we've done a little bit of our homework about the Mirror Universe, and that's a donor bonus episode, but we haven't done any homework on the character of Harry Mudd. And I would kind of like, I think there's more than one TOS episode with that character.
Oh, yeah?
Do you want to watch one of them?
Yeah, I'm into that. Let's do it. What is the name of the episode that we're going to watch?
Let's see.
Mudd's Women?
There's Mudd's Women and I, Mudd are the two Harry Mudd episodes. Mm-hmm. And I guess Mudd's Women is his first appearance in the canon.
Okay.
Do you want to watch that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Like fun.
I predict that this will be astonishingly sexist.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just I'm just going to toss that out there.
We'll counterbalance that with plenty of dick and fart jokes.
Yeah. We'll soften the blow of 1960s brand misogyny with our own 2018 brand poor ale fart humor.
That's us. Well, Ben, did you like this comic book?
I did. I really like the art style, and I like the storytelling, and I'd say that, like, maybe if I have a criticism, it's that I don't care as much about people in the Mirror Universe. So the goals of saving people and doing the right thing in the Mirror Universe feel less important in a way. And so I don't think that's the writer's fault. You know, I think they're doing a great job despite that. But that's a bias that I have. And, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot that can be done to undo that.
Yeah.
Did you like the issue?
I think I'm just generally more pro-mirror than you, both in real life and in the context of
a
comic book.
When you look in a mirror, you see something that's fairly easy on the eyes, and I don't have that luxury, Adam. Check your mirror privilege.
That's because you use a circus mirror for some reason, Ben. Every time I stay over at your place, I'm telling you, you got to change that bathroom mirror. It's not flattering. Really helps you shave, though.
Came with the rental.
Yeah, I think I did. On the one level, I love reading comic books again, so that is helping buoy my feelings on this project. But I also like specifically issue 3 of this story. I think they did a good job with it. I God, the body count of this thing is really huge.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a Pierce Brosnan era 007 film where just like, oh yeah, I guess 007 can kill 35 people in 2 weeks and it's like no big deal to him.
Yeah. I'm just totally impressed by how well the characters are drawn. Like, it's got to be so easy to draw caricatures instead of like the actual characters that we see that are screen detailed.
Yeah, like, and the way the dialogue is written is really like true to the way they write it for the show.
Yeah, the Giorgio dialogue especially, you can definitely hear in her voice. I think the Sonequa Martin-Green like imagery of her in every panel, like, it just looks so accurate. It looks so much like her. I just think that's great.
Yeah.
So I'm digging it. Looking forward to issue 4.
Issue 4 is the conclusion of this story arc, right?
I think so. I think 4 is all we get.
Well, looking forward to that. Looking forward to reading the rest of these comics too. I'm really having fun with this.
That being said, Ben, in your page flipping of issue 3, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Oh man, I forgot to look for a drunk Shimoda. I guess maybe if I have to grab one close at hand, it's the little errand boy that pokes his head into the Emperor's fuck chamber. I think we even get his name. It's Calvus. Which is the world's shittiest Calvin. But
there's a bunch of mirror universe shuttles with like bumper stickers of Calvus peeing on on like the Klingon symbol.
Yeah, yeah. There's a weird subgenre of Calvus praying to a giant cross. Just like, did you ever read that comic strip? That's not what Calvus is about. But I like that he has the little sotto voce lunatic that he calls Emperor Fuckboy a lunatic after he has closed the doors. And
nice bit of dissent there.
Yeah, you got to be kind of brave to utter that out loud, even after the doors are closed in this universe, I feel like. And
yeah, because the cameras and the microphones are everywhere.
Yeah, but I think Calvus is my drunk Shimoda. How about you?
I thought a lot about the moment when the group of four are put down on their knees and Michael Burnham is able to spit up into the face of Emperor Fuckboy.
Yeah, that's the arc of the spit is almost
flat.
Yeah, it's like a laser of spit.
I have never been a good spitter. And I, like, growing up, I had always envied the good spitters, those who could, like, form a good spit and then, like, get it to go exactly where they want it to. Like when I spit, I'm just like spraying spit.
There's a weird part of adolescence where you see dudes walking around spitting all over the place and you're like, yeah, cool. I want to be like that guy.
But me, like, if I were to like lean down and spit, I would like spit all over my shirt. And that, I don't know if I need to tell you, is not cool.
nobody sees you drooling on yourself and goes, cool, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, not cool. And so I was so impressed by Michael Burnham's spit, both in like that she was able to gather it in a way that like could specifically like target his cheek.
Yeah.
And also like with the force of it, because that patoo, that's a forceful comic book sound, and the no arc on it, like it knocks his head back. It's like he was shot in the face.
It's like Superman spit at him.
Yeah, I really dug that part. So, yeah. I mean, with nothing to lose, Michael Burnham gets off one last shot, and that's why she's my Shimoda.
Nice move, Michael Shimoda.
Well, we know what's coming up next. It's the 4th issue of Star Trek Discovery Succession. That'll be the next comic book we read, but as we mentioned before, we'll be back at you next time with an episode about Mudd's women.
Yeah.
So if you feel like watching that episode before we reconvene, I'd encourage you to do that.
Yeah, you've been forewarned. Thanks for continuing to listen to Greatest Discovery here in the off season. We're having a ton of fun having a looser show with more kind of a more open format than we're accustomed to. And
it's a Star Trek sandbox.
Yeah. little Star Trek sandbox that we get to play in. I was trying to think, like, would it be possible to play like the collectible card game or anything? I mean, it's not like disco themed, but like if we totally run out of shit to do, could we board game over pod?
Let me just say that I hope production is on time. Because if we get into like the fall and the winter and they're like, oh, we got to kick it back a year.
Yeah.
That could be, that could be board game time.
Yeah. So the board game of Damocles is hanging over this show.
Yeah.
We will let Rob take it from here.
Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. It's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte, and our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. Or you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Please use the hashtag GreatestGen or GreatestDiscovery when tweeting about the show. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.